Dun, 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 dun. President Donald Trump? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
We have money. Lots of money in the state. Stan McKay on the right.
Who is the most effective lobbyist on Capitol Hill? Natalie Gochner, this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and I am joined on the political right by State Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody.
Dan, always wonderful to spend some time with you. And State Senator Jim DeBacchus representing the political left. Morning, Jim.
It's fun to be here with the only sensible person in the Republican House.
Thank you.
You know, I think of a lot of things that
it's
I want.
It's not April Fool's.
a lot of...
I was just thinking, what could get Dan's colleagues most upset at him?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Holly. Sorry,
we have a lot of things to talk about, but I want to start off by just talking about the KCPW party on December 12th.
Party, party, party!
Woo! We've got KCPW board members hosting a fundraiser, and the Both Sides of the Aisle hosts are all going to be there, Dan, Jim, and Natalie.
Can't wait. Saturday.
You got to love it. Woo! If you want to learn more, call the station at 801-359-5279, but we're going to kind of try to entertain a little bit.
I'm buying the first drink for whoever shows up.
Why don't you buy that for Representative McKay?
Do people... Because he knows I'll be late. That's what he's trying to say. Do people really know how much we want them to be there? I mean, we would really like to meet the people that are listening to the show. I think, you know, it's one of those enigmas. You talk into a microphone, yes, and you're hoping that people hear you. I really would like for people to come and tell Jim just how reasonable I am.
Yeah, that's not going to happen at a public radio fundraising thing. I mentioned this to Jim and Dan, but I was on a conference call the other day, and a little later in the call, a gentleman said, "Oh, you're the one that does Both Sides of the Aisle. I recognize your voice." I thought that was kind of fun. So, you know, we're
look, please come. Please. You can't imagine how happy we would be to really see people that listen and enjoy it. It really is. We're really looking forward to meeting everybody that listens.
Yeah. So give the station a call at 801-359-5279. December 12th is the gathering.
That's coming right up.
Coming right up. We've had so much going on. Let's just chat about something fun for just a second here. What did you guys think about BYU and Utah getting the bowl picks? I mean, Jim, I know you're a big sports fan, but are you going to be in Vegas?
I actually love sports, Natalie.
Do you?
And this would be a game that if things lined up, I would get down to. How much fun is that going to be? I think that the state should withhold all money from the University of Utah until they agree to play BYU every year. And I'm sorry this doesn't fit in with Chris's master plan to take over the world, but too bad. You know what? The taxpayers are there, and we have the right to have a BYU-Utah football game every single year. So, yes, I would go.
I'm with Jim.
And you're a BYU fan, is that right?
I ran a bill, Jim, a couple of years ago to make funding conditional on something, and one of the things was a BYU, University of Utah, and you should have seen the athletic directors tell me how crazy I was. It was awesome.
No,
but I think if people understood how important that BYU, University of Utah football game is to the young people in this state, uh-huh, and how much it makes them look to the colleges in this state and want to achieve, we would have that game every year, but unfortunately, it's about the dollar bill.
That's kind of bull. The part about the kids and all that, but I mean, I agree with the thing. We need to get
a lot upset about this.
Weiler and I need to get screaming at each other. It's the way
it ought
to be.
You upset about this? Oh. Sorry, I realize I need to talk in a deeper voice.
The University of Utah people hate this.
Well, this is where I was going to come. I'm the political center, and I'm just like, right, I don't have any interest in playing BYU.
We don't want to waste our time with a lowly
independent
program. I want
to be with UCLA
program.
And USC, yeah, and U of A.
We're an elevated
and Oregon
program.
Well, don't blow three or four games that you should have won, and you'll be in the Rose Bowl.
What about Bronco Mendenhall's news? I mean, I'm happy for this guy. I can't imagine the challenge it's been for him to be at BYU in an independent conference and with all the other constraints he deals with.
I don't like him. He seems so pompous to me. You know, he just seems like
quiet.
That brother-in-law that is just, you know, he's holier than thou. Good luck at Virginia.
No, that's not it.
Maybe he's a nice guy. Never met him. I have never met him. He's probably a terrific person. I'm just giving you my impression.
He's the reserved, quiet type, right? I mean, he just goes about doing his job, and unfortunately, he has a public persona that's part of his job that rarely communicates well. But I like Bronco, and I'm excited for him. I think this is a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, it's a turnaround opportunity, isn't it? University of Virginia had several bad
years. I'm not sure
if
it's a loss for BYU.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is it bad news for BYU?
Okay,
or
was
it time?
Okay, so, I mean, we're off of politics. I guess we can talk about this. It was probably time, number one. But if you think about what BYU is looking for, they're looking for a coach who's going to keep the program out of the limelight for the wrong reasons. And Bronco delivered. He delivered keeping them out of the limelight for the wrong reasons. Unfortunately, we didn't really get over the hill to being in the limelight for the right reasons. And, you know, conference and independence, some of those things, those were problems. But I'm excited for Bronco, and I also think it was classy. Mm-hmm. He says, hey, you know what? I know I've committed. I should immediately turn to recruiting, which is, if anybody understood the college football coach recruiting schedule.
It's right now.
They would, yeah, it's right now. Yeah. And it's really, they would cause a lot of sympathy. But Bronco said, you know what? I know that's something pulling at me, but I'm devoted to my job here at the BYU, and I'm gonna stick it out through the bowl game and try to get that 100th win.
All I can say is go Utes in the bowl game. Let's talk for a minute, just last part of this segment. In the next segment, we're going to talk about the whole Trump and religious freedom and the Muslim comments. But let's talk about the state budget for a minute. You all, both representatives, got news this week about a state that is, I'm going to say, you know, strong revenue growth. I know it's not as strong as it's been, but $560 million more dollars to spend this year, a mix of one-time and ongoing, and a rainy day fund that's sitting over $400 million. Dan, that's money to go do good things for this state. Time to invest.
It's a good number for a one-time funding, right? Mm-hmm. They were very conservative about what the ongoing funding was. And what everybody, you know, we're all excited about those numbers. But you have to realize there is still a budget shortfall in the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still, I was just pulling up that number, and unfortunately it's not working on my phone, but it's in the $37, $39 million that we're still short in the general fund. So while it is a great year for education, it is a great year for, you know, we've had income tax growth this year. Sales tax, are continuing to see
erosion.
There's
a good reason for that, but I want to hear your comments on all this money, Jim.
There's a good reason for that. The state economy is going up at a significantly higher rate than state tax revenues. How do you explain that?
I can explain it.
You'll explain the right reason. I'm going to take a shot at it, which is the Republicans in the legislature are so adept at letting their corporate friends exempt themselves from every kind of tax that is humanly imaginable, and it is not a good reflection anymore of state revenues. They ought to at least be in tandem. Earmarks, that kind of
thing. I can add some things in there, but I would just say it's not commonly understood how big of a tax cut this state got in the last, you know, decade, and dealt with taking most of the sales tax off of food, which was a major hit to the state budget, $175 million a year. And then the Huntsman income tax reforms that took us from the 7% rate to the 5% rate, mm-hmm. another $285 million annually that didn't make it into state coffers. I can find a $500 million that aren't there now that would have been if those changes hadn't happened each year.
And luckily, that $500 million is instead being reinvested in Utah's economy in other ways that are creating value in the system. I mean, it's the economy is not a closed environment. And so since companies, corporations, and individuals chase tax incentives just like everybody else does, I don't want to lose them.
Jim, I could show you data that shows that our tax burden fell from 9th highest in the country to now 28th.
You bet. And if you're Forbes magazine and you're part of, and you're a Huntsman or a Romney or an Eccles, you're doing terrific. If you're an average working person, you're not doing so well. That's what the figures show. And it's very, very, very sad what's happened. Remember to that $285 million as the high rate went from 7 to 5%? That was directly from the Huntsmans and Eccles. all directly out of our school children's pockets. It was devastating. It's terrible, and it ought to be reversed.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the presidential election.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Been chatting with my colleagues here in the studio a little bit about Capitol Hill, and you guys are both, you know, veterans up there, come from different parties, probably see the world quite differently. There was a legislative policy summit this year. Our former governor, Mike Leavitt, spoke there, and he talked a bit about statesmanship and gamesmanship up on the Hill. And I thought it'd be fun if we took just a second and talked about how those two dynamics play out. And just to kind of cue it up, I certainly saw in my time working with three different governors on Capitol Hill times when a governor's office would kind of set something up with the legislature just for sport to get something they really wanted. We used to call it a hairy arm. So what we would do is put forward a policy in the budget that was not particularly attractive, hence the hairy arm, and let the legislature just go after it. And while they were going after that particular thing, they weren't going after the things we really cared about. And that's an example of gamesmanship to accomplish a strategy you care about. Get your reaction, Jim and Dan.
Well, it's I've seen those in the budget, right? I mean, yeah. I've seen those
some
opportunities.
Hairy arms.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is a lot of times those hairy arms create some interesting issues. For example, last session, we had a hairy arm in the budget.
It's like an intentional red herring, as I think about it. We're trying to get you going down a path that isn't important.
And it was really effective in this situation. You know, another way you can play the game is you drag the pole that, you know, where you would like to be way past what your goal is. Just knowing that someone is going to pull the goal all the way back to, and you're hoping it won't get farther than where you want it to be.
Right. That's a good example.
And so I see that all the time. The governor last year said, you know what? He went and had a press conference in an elementary school and said, we're going to give 6% of the increase, 6% increase to the statewide education budget, which was far
huge.
And above
big
anything.
Deal.
It's a huge number, right? He dragged the goal way past where he thought, I think where he thought it was going to be. But he really laid down the line for legislative leadership. And they spent the entire session trying to figure out how not to look bad compared to the governor's poll.
Yeah, there
does
you
that
go.
Make sense?
Yeah, it does. Jim, what kind of gamesmanship do you see up on Capitol Hill sometimes, both for the better or for the worse?
You know, it kills me. We have this – are we doing this thing again where we make everybody cut their budget by 2%? For no apparent
in the first
reason
week of the session.
Other than is that over? Or was
not.
That a one time? Or is that just like goofball politics year after year?
I don't think it's going to be good. I don't think it's going to be over, but I don't know if we're going to do it again this session.
I mean, this is torturous, and it brings every single department head and everybody in there. And here's the game they play. They say, okay, you got to cut your budget by 2% or 3% or some amount. And then these department heads, they react one of two ways. Sometimes they come up with the most preposterous, ludicrous, just ridiculous things. Like there was one that cut – I think they cut all the oxygen testing in the state. And they gave the example, well, a lot of people will die because when people go to turn on their oxygen, it won't work or something. And then there are those who studiously go and say, well, we spent years
travel
getting ready.
Here.
And we've done this, and they kind of do it. And then at the end of all of this, and they send messages through to their employees, and you know, families have to think, well, we're on the hit list. You know, we're part of that 2%. Our program must not be important. And then they go, oh, just kidding. We got the money. Nobody has to do any of that. No company would do that, except maybe Donald Trump.
No, that's not true.
I mean, this is just a terrible system.
That is not true. Companies stress test their budgets all of the time. Jim.
But they don't announce it to all the employees and say, you know what, you were on that 2%.
Absolutely they do.
Republican companies.
You mean profitable companies.
What I love is when the gamesmanship, someone breaks through with some real stately, well, statewoman, stateman kind of things.
Yeah.
And you guys have any good examples of those? I mean, certainly the non-discrimination ordinance thing that happened last year was a big breakthrough for this state. That took a lot of people to move. to the political center, I might add.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it on several occasions on issues that I've worked with. You know, I'm not going to get into the details of a very wonky tax policy problem, mm-hmm. but, I mean, explaining it takes more than an hour, so that's and it will bore everybody to death. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people whose ox were going to be gored by changing the system was the counties and the school districts and everybody else, but they all recognized, okay, yep, we've had a problem for 25 years.
Yeah, and time so to fix it.
It's time to fix it. And so they got together, we got together, we spent a year, and they came up with largely a great solution. And I can honestly say they were great statespeople in the issue.
Jim, you want to add anything?
Nope.
Okay. Let's go on to something.
No.
He, as a Democrat on Capitol Hill, he probably only sees the games and not enough of the statesmanship. Is that fair, Jim?
Well, he's frequently the moderator yelling about creating new game pieces. I mean, bless his heart. I love Jim, but I follow religiously his, you know, his social media stuff just because I'd like to know what the next game piece is that we need to get off the board.
Well said.
What are we going to do? I sit here as a Republican watching the presidential race, and I watch these outrageous things being said by Donald Trump and all of the media that he drives in doing this, and it makes me ashamed, Dan.
Can we just call him the Golden Wave and just refer to him by his hairstyle? Can we just do that? I can't give the guy any more free press.
Yeah.
I can't. I can't stomach it. The idea that this guy represents my party, the things he says represents left or middle, how can this guy be the president?
And you say, you know, he doesn't represent your party, and Jim, he obviously doesn't represent Jim's, but he's got all these people that support him. Jim, well, and I don't think they're Republicans. I think they're nuts.
You know, it is... It's interesting.
But 68%, I'm not going to be running for office.
But 68% of them would go and vote for him if he was an independent.
Yeah, this
so
is what I mean.
So not only are they nuts, but they're transient nuts.
Yeah, and it's not America to me.
I think it is America. I think it's humanity. I think there is this ability to appeal to people's deepest fears, and we've seen it in our history. From time to time,
yeah.
Certainly we've seen it in Europe and through human history. It particularly, I think, it's pronounced at times of epic change where people feel like they're some group, especially a group that's been in power, feels as if they're losing their power mm-hmm. and they're losing their ability yeah. to control their own life. And Donald Trump has been able to zero in on that group, and he's been able to speak to their basis fears, and he's been able to turn that into populism. And the part that's scariest is he might win the nomination and he might be president. Imagine he gets through and right before a convention vote or right before next November, there is a terrorist incident. That kind of fear can motivate a President Donald Trump. The days of saying and scoffing and seeing.
This is where the Electoral College has to help us, doesn't it, Dan?
I don't think it can. I really don't. I would like to say that it is. But sadly, I see that actually as an interesting template, Jim, for making this. You're politicizing, you know, terrorism events. Because the one thing, whether you like it or not, the one stain that is sticking to the Democratic Party nationally right now is the difficulty that they have had in drawing or creating a clear boogeyman and who to go get when there's a terrorist incident.
Yeah. Well, and what was you know, President Obama's speech about this week? You know, I mean, I didn't get it. He's doing some things that are okay and that I support, but
everybody,
I didn't think that was a
it.
Proper use of.
But you look at, you know, this speech or that speech. Speeches come and go, but look at the big tidal
the
wave.
The policy.
And no, I'm not even going there. I'm saying that when Margaret Thatcher came in and Ronald Reagan came in, you can watch countries, you can watch civilizations change. And I'm saying watch the French election. Probably the unthinkable is going to happen as Le Pen gets serious representation. There is a reaction that's going on in the country, and those skeptics who continue to be bemused by this, I don't care about party, really. I mean, mm-hmm. it is It's far beyond that. It has happened in our past.
Yeah.
And it might well be happening now.
And a lot what we're talking about is discrimination. You know, I mean, it's this notion that so the LDS Church puts out a statement this week. I thought it was just phenomenal in the way that it addressed religious liberty. And instead of saying a whole bunch about how, you know, Donald Trump wants to completely shut down Muslims entering the U.S., they just said, you know, with regards to religious liberty, we want to quote Joseph Smith from 1841. And then they quoted him in a city council meeting in the city of Nauvoo, where he's basically said that Catholics, Presbyterians, Methodists, Baptists, Latter-day Saints, Quakers, Episcopals, Universalists, Unitarians, Mohammedans, and all other religious sects and denominations, whatever, shall have free toleration and equal privileges in this city. That was 1841, Jim.
It was a year or so ago. and I was meeting with Elder Perry.
Oh, I thought you were saying 1841 was a year ago.
No.
Going to come to your help.
And we were talking about non-discrimination and the fact that it had failed the previous year. And I said, Elder Perry, there cannot be. He basically said, okay, you know, give me your gut. Tell me it wasn't. He said, it cannot be another kind of camouflaged, written as a giant principle and whatever. I said, if we're going to get this thing passed, it's going to have to go a lot deeper and a lot more specific and a lot more. LeVar Christensen can't grab the microphone and say, well, that's my principle. So what I say to the LDS Church on these broad, important, serious issues, that's very nice, but the subtlety of it loses people sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and I would not presume to know where and where not, but you can be too subtle. We all can. We ought to be able to say that Donald Trump is an idiot, and not put it too subtly.
Lots of serious topics on both sides of the aisle today.
Yeah, we got sober there.
I'm joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBakis.
Donald Trump brings out the sobriety. We're going to have how weird is that?
We're going to have more fun at the KCPW party this Saturday.
Should I wear my Donald Trump wig?
Call 801-359-5279 to learn out more
information.
Look,
if you don't come, Natalie and Dan and I are going to come to your house, and we're going to grab you. What time? What time is the dinner?
Oh, goodness.
6 to 8, yeah?
It's not on my paper.
6 to 8, so quarter to...
No, 4 to something.
What?
It's 4:30 to 6.
Okay, 4:30 to 6. Okay, we're going to be there.
Hey, so just have some fun with you guys. A little bit of give me your first reaction when I say a name, and I'll just show you the kinds of personalities we're dealing with. Gary Herbert.
Unbelievably conservative.
I'm going to do different ones for you so you don't have so long to think about it, Nemeke. Ben McAdams.
A classy individual.
Okay. Jim, Olene Walker.
Beloved.
Dan, Jackie Biskupski.
Hair. A revolutionary, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Greg Hughes.
Friend.
Jim DeBakis.
My other friend.
Tell our listening audience that he's sitting here with a chihuahua in his lap as we
I know.
We do our thing.
I know.
Okay, Jim, let me give you another one. How about Olene Walker?
I think Olene Walker. Oh, I got to go one word, huh?
You can do what you
historic.
Want.
Historic.
Yeah, something special.
And you know what? She's smart. And I'm still going to go back to say, you just back away from this
you
when I
kept
say it, Natalie.
Yeah, that's okay.
She would have been governor if she would have been a man. They automatically, that whole power structure, all of Huntsman's people, everybody in the Republican Party, coerced her and squeezed her and poked her into thinking, I think, that she wasn't going to win and whatever. Had she been a man? I mean, look, Gary Herbert took over.
Yeah.
That, with her strength and her abilities, she should have been the governor.
After attending her funeral, I'm in agreement with you. She was a phenomenal woman, and it was just incredible to learn more about her.
Yep.
Okay, another one for you, Dan. State's most influential lobbyist.
Oh, man.
Maybe some lobbyists listen to this program. Maybe they'll come to our party.
No, I would say...
I'm not going then.
It's kind of... I would go Doug Foxley and Frank Pignanelli.
All right. I want to hear your thoughts on that, Jim.
boy, the most influential. I don't talk to lobbyists. Really, lobbyists don't talk to me. I don't know. I'm not much in their world.
Most moderate senator, Jim.
Brian Chiesawa.
That's mine. He represents me. And let's say most liberal person in the House. To Dan.
I can't decide. This is a tough, tough one, but I think it's Patrice Arendt.
Mm. Okay. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Yeah. Who's the worst college president you ever worked with?
Yeah, I was setting you guys up, and you're going to set me up.
Who's your favorite staff member that you work with now? You see all these things.
Yeah. Okay. No comment. No comment. I've got nothing to add. Any quick gripes?
The holidays are too busy.
Holidays too busy, Jim.
Holidays aren't busy enough.
For lonely Jim, give him something to do. Yeah, this has been fun. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center. Representative Dan McKay on the political right. State Senator Jim DeBacchus on the political left. The program is produced by Ross Jamblis. We hope you've enjoyed the program, and join us on Saturday for the KCPW fundraiser. Call 801-359-5279. Thanks for listening.